This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll discuss the city's first ever equity strategy with Deputy Mayor Judy Reese Morse. Then Jessica Rosegard joins former Senator Mary Landrieu to talk domestic violence issues and the documentary film Five Awake. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. But first, summer in New Orleans means two things, heat and rain. It's been a wet one so far, and if you live here, you know where the problem spots are in your neighborhood. You park your car up on the curb when it rains and carefully plan your day around the weather. Flooding and heat can affect our lives and our health. A new project draws on citizens' stories and photos to figure out where the problems are. WWNO's Tegan Wendland talked with Julia Kumari Drapkin, who runs IC Change, an online community weather and climate journal.
Julia, we know that some areas flood more than others. Isn't that just because they're lower lying? Like, what don't we know about flooding in New Orleans?
Well, every block in a city is different and reacts differently to the weather. So my street might get more flooding than the one around the corner. The lower-lying areas of the city actually were old cypress forests, and even there's a barrier island closer to the lake. So on every block in certain neighborhoods in the city, even if they're low-lying, you can have flooding on one side of the street and nothing on the other. So we're trying to get a better idea of the details.
And your project really focuses in on Gentilly. Why did you choose that neighborhood and what are you doing there?
Well, IC Change is working on a citywide project, but we focused in on Gentilly because there's a lot of things that are going on there. We've seen patterns with a lot of flooding as well as extreme heat. And also the city is kind of focusing a lot of efforts on blue and green infrastructure.
What does that mean? What's blue and green infrastructure?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, again, our streets are made of asphalt and concrete, and they don't handle both heat and flooding very well. So in order for us to be more resilient to extreme weather and climate, the city is investing on creating more green spaces that can absorb excessive water as well as kind of deal with a lot of our heat issues. And so it's this, I think of it as an infrastructure magic bullet, but we want to know how things are before all of that stuff goes in so that we can measure its impact.
And there are new projects, of course, planned along those lines in the Gentilly neighborhood,
yes,
including bioswales and rain gardens and pervious surfaces. So you're kind of going in there and doing some of this crowdsourcing work beforehand. What are you finding? What are people saying?
We have people posting about flooding up to 7 feet even during very low-level storm events. And not only are they posting pictures, but their neighbors are driving by and posting pictures as well of the same corners. So one of those corners is on St. Bernard, and the resident there is named Destiny Bell. And she's been posting about how concerned she is not only about the flooding, but also about the health of her 2-year-old who has, you know, plays in the yard and she's constantly worried about all the debris and garbage.
So she's been posting on IC Change and your team gave her a call. Let's hear what she had to say.
With all the flooding, you have like whatever trash or like debris is in the street. And, you know, him being 2, he wants to investigate and he wants to touch everything. And so I have to be super cautious.
Well, that sounds like a really frustrating challenge, and it's only one of the many challenges that you're looking at with your project. Coming into the end of summer now, it's about to get really hot. What are you hearing about urban heat?
So heat is like climate change at the level of our bodies. It impacts every one of our systems, the way we think, our circulation, our respiration, and it disproportionately impacts the elderly and the young. But we in the South here in New Orleans, we assume that, you know, heat is just a part of living here. You know, you talk to people and they're like, oh, I just drink a lot of water. But our heat events are becoming more extreme. They're starting earlier, they're lasting longer, and they're hitting us more frequently. And we want to understand the impacts of these events. So we want to dive into the details of how we're being impacted and where we need to look more closely at how heat is impacting our lives. Is it the people who are working outside in our gardens or doing construction or in our kitchens, in our restaurants? Is it because our houses have terrible insulation or is it people with only window units? But we don't know unless people tell us. So we're asking community members to post pictures and to tell us, you know, when they're being impacted and how.
This is really a public health issue.
Absolutely. Heat kills more people than every natural disaster combined. And it doesn't really show up very easily in our hospital records. People have cramps or feel fatigue or faint, but it exacerbates every single one of our already existing health conditions. Even medications don't work properly under extreme heat conditions.
You helped with a project in New York centered around this last year called the Harlem Heat Project, where you measured something called indoor heat waves. What does that even mean?
Well, again, it comes down to urban spaces. We don't actually understand how they react to extreme weather. Inside apartments actually can get much hotter than even outside in the city on our streets. The indoor heat actually behaves differently than outdoor heat because our buildings trap heat. So what we did is we put temperature and humidity sensors inside people's apartments to measure indoor heat. And what we found is that inside people's apartments who only have maybe a window unit or no AC, it was 7 degrees hotter than it was outside.
It's amazing how much science there is going on here and how little we know about these urban landscapes that we live in every day.
Exactly. Meteorologists refer to urban spaces as the great unknown, the great wilds, when it comes to understanding our ecology. And people are a part of our environment. We tend to think of forests as being the ecosystems, but we actually live and breathe in outside and are impacted by the weather and climate, just like our, the fish in the ocean or the birds in the trees.
So what are some solutions that officials might be looking to solve some of these public health issues? I know some say air conditioning could be included in people's rent, for example.
There is no right to cool. Across the country, this is an issue. In public housing, in public schools, in jails, we don't have a right to cool in the way that we have a right to heat. It's a much bigger discussion that we need to have as we kind of adapt to climate change. That said, air conditioning isn't the only answer either, because it increases the problems. It increases our energy usage. It increases the costs, and ultimately isn't the only solution that we need to be looking for.
Well, thank you so much, Julia Kumari-Drapkin, founder of IC Change.
Thank you. And if any of your listeners would like to join the investigations, they can head over to IC Change, take a picture, tell us a story, and we'll talk back.
Support for the Coastal Desk comes from the Walton Family Foundation, the Koi Poo Foundation, and the Greater New Orleans Foundation. New Orleans recently launched its first ever equity strategy, which seeks to address inequities that prevent the city from growing to its full capacity. Joining me now to talk more about the strategy is Deputy Mayor Judy Reese-Morse. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Janae.
So what does an equitable government look like for New Orleans?
An equitable government is one that looks at policies, programs, and service delivery, and also considers what is just and fair in the city of New Orleans. This city's equitable government will focus on closing gaps that have been caused by historic inequities around a number of quality of life areas. We are really pleased to be one of the few cities in the United States that has a formal equity strategy in place to begin to, again, consider fairness and justice when it comes to policy development, program management, and service delivery.
Now, what organizations are you guys working with to ensure that this plan works for the people of this community?
We took a year-long process prior to announcing the equity strategy in April of 2017 to work with national organizations, a number of local organizations, and to hear from hundreds of New Orleanians across all parts of the city, diverse backgrounds, geography, age, gender. We really had a great cross-section of people from across the city. We did one-on-one interviews. We did focus groups. We did larger community listening sessions. We did a survey of employees here at City Hall. We worked with two national organizations, a think tank called Policy Link, and also an organization that works on race and equity called the Government Alliance on Race and Equity. So working with those national organizations hearing from people from across the city in a number of different areas, and also hearing from employees who work here at City Hall, we were able to put together the strategy that we call Equity New Orleans.
Equity New Orleans. And folks can check out the website as well, correct? EquityNewOrleans.org?
We do have a website that is the website address, and we invite everyone in the city of New Orleans to visit that website. You'll have an opportunity to learn more about the one-year community engagement process that really helped to inform the formal strategy that the city now employs. You'll also get a chance to learn more about the organizations that we worked with and to understand the process that was used to arrive at the strategy.
Now, earlier you mentioned some meetings and listening sessions. What feedback were you getting from people in the community?
We heard a lot from people that it is important for city government to be accessible to people in the city and to really meet people where they are. So community meetings, as we now know them, are important, and those should continue. But government should really be sure to come up with very specific strategies in order to engage as many residents as possible. Not everybody is available to come to a community meeting right at 6 o'clock or 6:30. Some people are still working. Some people have other commitments. For some people, the weekends are better. So government has to think about a number of different strategies and be very creative and innovative in order to make sure that everybody in the city has access to government and has access to the information that government can provide.
How does this strategy address what many are calling a housing crisis in the city?
Well, affordable housing is one of the issues that our administration has focused on a great deal. We have a multi-year plan in place to address affordable housing and to make a certain number of affordable housing units available for people who are looking for housing, and obviously we know that many are. But the reason why the equity strategy is important is because it is a sustainable approach that once this administration is gone and the next administration comes in and the one that follows that one and the one that follows that one, we'll have a process and a structure and a foundation within government to be sure that issues like affordable housing or healthcare or transportation or economic opportunity, all of those areas and many others are looked at with what we call an equity lens, mm-hmm. which means that policymakers in government ask themselves certain questions to be sure that, again, government is accessible to everyone in the city, no matter who they are, what their income level is, or where they live, and to make sure that what is being developed on behalf of the people of New Orleans really does speak to everyone in the city of New Orleans. There's a term called equitable development that many people across the country are talking about and looking at, and the smartest cities are really focused on making sure that there is an equitable development process in place within their city governments. And what this means, quite simply, is making sure that as communities develop and grow, we look at everyone in those communities and make sure that they, again, have access to information, that they have an opportunity to contribute to the growth of their community. And, of course, we know there's a lot of data that will tell us that if that happens, then everyone in the city does better.
Right.
Cities start to deal less with issues like violence and unemployment, health inequities, and many other issues. Many of those things start to decrease when everyone in communities across a city have an opportunity to participate and contribute. And so making sure that, again, the city of New Orleans' government, our city government, is equitable, having this equity strategy in place will really help New Orleans to address those kinds of issues in an equitable way.
Absolutely. And this is addressed through policies. So let's talk about the role that the Foundation for Louisiana plays with this strategy.
So the Foundation for Louisiana is and has been an important partner for the city of New Orleans, specifically, though, around economic opportunity and, of course, equity. And in this particular instance for Equity New Orleans, the foundation served as the fiduciary agent for this effort, but really, really much more. They also served as an important thought leader and thought partner for us as we designed this initiative and was very much present throughout the one-year process that led to the formal strategy.
And their work goes hand in hand. I mean, you mentioned that they're doing a lot of good work for the city, but they're also doing a lot of good work for the state as well, as the governor had recommended them to the Justice Reinvestment Task Force. And I feel that those issues work hand in hand, correct?
Absolutely. So again, criminal justice reform, violence and murder reduction, all of those issues, which, by the way, the Foundation for Louisiana works with in some form of fashion in different communities across the city. But for city government, these are all issues that we have taken on since Mayor Landrieu has been mayor since 2010.
Yeah.
And so focusing in on all of these kind of equity areas, and then now with government having the infrastructure to not just look at those areas, but to look at other areas as well, I think will really be important for the city moving forward.
Yeah. Now, let's briefly mention some of the programs and the current work that the mayor and this administration is doing to address these inequities.
We focus on a number of areas. Of course, I think everyone is familiar with NOLA for Life, which is our murder reduction strategy. It's a comprehensive strategy that focuses on enforcement, prevention, intervention, and rehabilitation. It has successfully decreased the murder rate here in New Orleans when comparing the years since the strategy has been in place versus the number of years prior to it being in place. Economic opportunity is our work around helping to connect those who are unemployed and underemployed, and also helping to connect businesses of color to procurement opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a lot of work around the issue of race proper, whether it was our racial reconciliation initiative called the Welcome Table New Orleans, and now, of course, Equity New Orleans, which is the systemic look at how racism and institutional racism has caused inequities that now we all, no matter what our race, we all have to look at and address.
Yeah.
Our criminal justice reform work has been noted across the country, and our safety and justice challenge is a part of that body of work that really focuses on reducing the jail population here in New Orleans. Our health department has put together a beautiful strategy to address health inequities, and you'll be hearing much more about that plan in the coming weeks. And, of course, our resilience and sustainability work, which is extremely important. That office has been around for the last 2 years. And you may remember that the City of New Orleans received a grant from the Rockefeller Foundation. In mm-hmm. fact, we were the first of 100 cities to be named a Rockefeller Resilient City. And so all of that work really comes together in a very nice way, we believe. It all lives under the umbrella of equity, and it all, in one way or another, looks to address inequities in those specific areas that the city has dealt with for a long time.
Yeah, we really have. Judy Reese Morse serves as Deputy Mayor of Citywide Initiative. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Janae. It's been great to be with you.
Louisiana consistently has one of the highest rates of domestic violence against women in the country, with numbers nearly double the national average. But thanks to a small group of local women, legislation passed in 2014 that many hope will make Louisiana a safer place for women. Their advocacy is highlighted in the documentary film, Five Awake. WWNO's Jessica Rosegard spoke with former Senator Mary Landrieu about the film and the issue of domestic violence.
Five Awake is a documentary film about a group of women and their efforts to get meaningful domestic violence reform passed in the legislature. How did this come about?
It was filmed here in Louisiana, and it's a story about five Louisiana women. One that woke up, Charmaine Cassiope, she was touched by domestic violence through the death of a dear, dear friend down in Terrebonne in Lafourche Parish, and the shooter, who eventually killed himself, went through a rampage in those parishes, killing and maiming several people, including family members of his former wife. Charmaine was so moved and touched and horrified by this story that she picked up the phone and called another woman attorney in New Orleans, Kim Sport, whose sister had been a victim of domestic violence. And the two of them just decided to do something about it. They started calling their friends, and then they got Helena Moreno, who's one of our young, wonderful legislators, to sponsor a series of legislation. And they just decided they were going to make changes. So they did their research. They did their communication strategy by getting a story in every parish that they could share with each and every legislator. So these guys and gals couldn't say, it doesn't happen in my town. They said, oh, yes, it does. And that's basically how it started.
They really pounded the pavement and walked the halls of the legislature to get this legislation through, didn't they?
Absolutely. And what was so, you know, amazing about it is that they were all volunteers. They started with only a handful of women, which is what I think one of the most powerful messages of this whole story is, that it doesn't take an army. It doesn't even take a million women. It just takes a handful of good friends or colleagues or associates that have, you know, a certain skill set that complement each other. But most importantly, the passion and determination to see it through. So they went up and did. They walked the halls of the legislature. They would not take no for an answer. They stood down the gun lobby because one of the laws they changed, which was so important in our state, which has got one of the highest rates of domestic violence, is if you are convicted of domestic violence, you can no longer have access to guns. That's very important, considering more women were killed in our country between the years of 2001 and 2010, almost double the number of all the soldiers killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's horrifying.
The trailer for the film boasts that Louisiana is a red state, but still has some of the toughest domestic violence laws in the country. Obviously, this legislation passed with bipartisan support. You mentioned the gun aspect of the legislation was probably a tough one for a lot of lawmakers to vote for. Why is it more difficult to pass domestic violence legislation in red states?
Well, when you take on, you know, the gun lobby, and of course the NRA, you know, their sort of basic philosophy is guns for everybody any day, all day, no matter what. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that's kind of their view, which is sad because I know many gun owners, including, you know, gun owners in my own family, who do believe in background checks, who do believe that, you know, while they have a right to hunt and even carry a handgun for self-protection, that handguns should not be in the hands of mentally ill or criminals or men convicted of domestic violence. They had to fight against the NRA and they won. And now the NRA has stepped down from fighting this in many other states and conceded because women have come together, Republican women, Democratic women, and said enough is enough. If someone is convicted of domestic violence, they should not be allowed to carry a handgun.
The legislature passed a bill this session extending domestic violence laws to cover people in dating and same-sex relationships. Do you think these previous efforts led by Helena Moreno and the legislature have given this issue momentum in the state?
Absolutely. The larger package was passed was passed the last year Bobby Jindal was governor. He signed those bills into law. But since then, in the first and second year of Governor Edwards' term, there have been additional laws that needed to be either upgraded or changed or penalties enhanced. And then in addition, this coalition, which has stayed together, continues to fight for funding for domestic violence shelters, funding for counseling and prevention of abuse. But we believe that we will see a reduction in domestic violence because of the efforts of these women. And we believe it will make our whole state a more safe and just place.
Senator Landry, thank you so much for your time.
All righty.
Okay, take care.
And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to janae@wwno.org. Visit our website to check out previous shows and be sure to catch us next week right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us.